Oh, why are you men so foolish? You breeders who breed our men, let the fools, the weaklings, and crazy keep breeding and breeding again.
You're listening to a poem written in 1920 by the superintendent of Virginia Western Hospital as part of his annual report for that year.
The worst is as good as the best.
Joseph Spencer DeJarnett wrote the poem to persuade the state of Virginia to adopt an agricultural practice that he thought could be applied to better the human race. In short, DeJarnett and other proponents of the eugenics movement believe that only the best characteristics of humanity should be kept, and that the worst characteristics of the species should be eliminated by preventing certain people from having children.
Bred true to Mendel's law.
Gregor Mendel, of course, was talking about the cultivation of peas, a plant whose DNA sequence is much simpler than the human genome. Mendel was an Austrian monk who tracked the germination of pea plants in his garden, and his notes on how to grow the best plants became the basis for modern hereditary theory. The science shows that certain traits are passed down from generation to generation.
This is the law of Mendel, and often he makes it plain, defectives will breed defectives, and the insane breed insane.
The eugenic movement began in the late 19th century when Francis Galton, a cousin of Charles Darwin, published works that tried to show how genetics could be utilized to make for a better human race. One of his followers, British mathematician Carl Pearson, created new statistical methods to help track hereditary traits. But J. David Smith, Dean of Education and Human Services at Longwood College in Farmville, says that the theories put forth by the proponents of eugenics were not always scientifically viable. Pearson is reported to have ignored information that contradicted the theories he was trying to establish.
And these were powerful ideas, and if we look back today, it's easy to see that what was created out of them, in fact, was a pseudoscience. Eugenics compared to what we're seeing developed today in terms of genetic science is in some cases laughable.
Nonetheless, the eugenics movement took hold in the United States. Indiana passed a law in 1907 that allowed for forced sterilizations of people under that state's care.
It is chilling to see that those very rudimentary ideas, and in many cases very incorrect ideas of the hereditary nature of certain qualities, were dead serious and led to the development of social policies that affected the lives of millions of people.
Smith's book, Minds Made Feeble, outlines how flawed the studies used by the eugenicists were. Proponents of eugenic laws based much of their information on now discredited family studies that tried to show that poverty was an inherited trait. If the science was wrong, why were so many people affected? The story of what happened in Virginia illustrates what happens when bad science meets public policy. Paul Lombardo is professor in law and medicine at the Center for Biomedical Ethics at the University of Virginia. He explains the law was copied from language written by a prominent eugenicist.
Virginia's law was modeled on a law written by Harry Laughlin, a law that was actually publicized in 1914 called the Model Eugenical Sterilization Act.
The logic went, if people with disabilities were not allowed to have children, future generations would save money that would not be spent to take care of their children.
Virginia took up this cause in 1924 for a number of reasons. The man who wanted a sterilization law more than anyone else in Virginia was Dr. Albert Priddy.
Dr. Priddy was the superintendent of the Virginia colony for the epileptic and the feeble-minded. The colony later became known as the Lynchburg Colony, and today the same campus is called the Central Virginia Training Center.
Priddy began sterilizing people around 1915 or 1916, even though there was no law that allowed him to do this. He claimed that it was his prerogative as a physician to operate on any of his patients in any way that he thought was appropriate for their health.
But eventually, Priddy's assumptions were challenged in court. A Richmond family filed suit against him for operating on the mother and two daughters without their consent.
He didn't lose that case, but he was warned by the judge that he ought to wait for the legislature before he did any more operations.
In 1924, a bill based on Harry Laughlin's model sterilization law passed the General Assembly and was signed into law by then-Governor Lee Trinkle, who had been elected on promises to reduce state spending on social welfare.
The very first thing he did upon becoming governor was make a trip to every state institution and ask the superintendents what could be done to save money. The sterilization bill was a direct response by the doctors who ran the state hospitals to Governor Trinkle's charge.
Priddy's lawyer cautioned him that the law would have to be tested throughout the U.S. federal court system. A test case would need to be found to prove the law was indeed constitutional. Their eyes turned to Carrie Buck, a Charlottesville woman who was pregnant when the forced sterilization law passed.
She had been raped by a relative of her foster parents in Charlottesville. Her foster parents went to the local authorities to have her sent away. She was picked for that role because her own mother was already at Lynchburg.
Carrie's mother allegedly had several illegitimate children and was believed to be unmarried, though Lombardo says it was later shown that Carrie's mother was actually married.
So they had two generations seemingly showing that this problem of having illegitimate children and perhaps being a prostitute was something, according to eugenical theory, that was inherited.
The trial was stacked in favor of the eugenicists. A man with little experience in litigation served as Carrie Buck's attorney. The judge ruled that Priddy could sterilize Carrie. The case hinged on Carrie's infant daughter, Vivian, whose IQ tests showed that she appeared to be feeble-minded. These tests were conducted by an employee of the Eugenics Record Office in Cold Harbor Springs, New York, which was set up to promote eugenics. The case was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which upheld the lower court ruling with emphatic zeal from one of the court's most remembered veterans.
Oliver Wendell Holmes was proud to be on the cutting edge of scientific thinking and endorsing eugenics, and he said so in his own private letters and correspondence, as well as giving what has been called the most totalitarian statement in the history of the United States Supreme Court in declaring of Carrie, her mother, and her daughter, three generations of imbeciles are enough.
Holmes delivered a genetic death sentence to the Buck family, cutting off their family line forever. Vivian died at the age of 8, and Carrie Buck died in 1983. The Virginia General Assembly also passed a racial purity law in 1924 to prevent the intermarriage between the races. Longwood's Dave Smith says the state was looking for other ways to control potential threats.
Eugenics being very much entwined with the idea that we've got to control people of races other than the Caucasian race.
As many as 8,000 people would be sterilized in the state of Virginia between 1924 and 1972. Nationwide, 60,000 were given vasectomies or tubal ligations against their will, in the name of science and in the name of good breeding.
Well, why do we allow these people to breed back to the monkey's nest?
Again, the words of Joseph Spencer DeJarnett, who pushed for the 1924 sterilization bill that started it all.
Oh, you wise men, take up the burden and make this your loudest creed. Sterilize the misfits promptly, all not fit to breed.
Sean Tubbs, WVT.